This is the Senate Energy and Utilities Policy and Finance Committee. It is Thursday, February 17th, 2022, and we are going to hear a couple bills, and we're going to hear a presentation on the governor's budget today. So we're going to start out with Senator Goggin. Senator Goggin has Senate File 3003. Senator Goggin, welcome to the committee. Dealing with the Prairie Island Net Zero Project. So proceed as you're ready.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. I am here to present Senate File 3003. What this bill does is it just changes the reporting date from January 1 of 2022 to January 2023, and that's because of supply chain issues that are affecting the ability to get the product for the project. But with that, Mr. Chair, I would also like to move an author's amendment, the A2 amendment.
Okay, Senator, well, somebody has to move this. Senator Rarick moves the A2 amendment. Any questions on the amendment? Not all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye, opposed, nay, and the amendment is on the bill.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. All this does is it just puts an end date of 2031 on the project, and then it also ensures that the 2023 dollars are allocated in fiscal year 2023 of $15 million. With that, I'd like to turn the testimony over to Blake Johnson with the Prairie Island Indian Community to give us an update on the project, sir.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Johnson. Please introduce yourself and proceed as you're ready.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Blake Johnson, and I'm the Senior State Government Relations Specialist for the Prairie Island Indian Community. And also a tribal member. My Indian name is Hokshita Mazawambali, which is Iron Eagle Boy. I am going to share my screen if I can. Sorry about this. I'm not seeing it pulling up when I go to share screen. Do you want to try to do it? Okay. Sorry about that. Perfect.
There we are.
Okay. A net zero energy community. So on this slide here, it shows the path to net zero in part of phase one. Our goal was to establish a vision, and that is achieving our energy sovereignty and sustainability and engaging our membership to get this as a community-based project. And so that was the first step, was to get that community-based aspect along with not only our adults but also our youth who are going to benefit this the most down the road. And then the next step was to evaluate a baseline, and what we did is we went back to 2019 to review exactly how much energy we use on a normal year, and what we gathered is about 20 million pounds of CO2 annually. The third one is create priorities, and the goal for this one is to just set up and figure out what we want out of this project and what we would like to see out of this project. Energy efficiency, renewable generation, and energy resiliency and sovereignty. And then from that, we went into weighing our options and the costs. Looking at every different aspect of the project, as in the wind, solar, geothermal, all the different aspects to see what would work for this project and making sure that we're not leaving anything off the table. And that results in the conservation efforts and generating opportunities and using the fund to its maximum amount. And then finally is the implement the plan, and that's to maximize the CO2 reductions through the combinations of the energy efficiency and the solar generation operation for future efforts. And what this bill does is goes into the part of phase two and phase three, and what the delay has been because of the new global realities, the increase in costs, the supply chain issues, and the labor shortage. Next slide. New global realities. Next slide. And as you see on this screen here, is the cost for the net zero projects has risen dramatically due to COVID. Steel, copper, aluminum, all the different things, and then with the labor costs and the availability, has made what we wanted to do to become net zero not able to, unless we waited a little bit longer to see if those costs do come down. Next slide. And so that proposed change that Senator Goggin has in this bill is right before you here too, is changing that date from January 1st, 2022 to January 1st, 2023. And one thing that we did notice is we did issue an RFP for the project before having to change this certified cost report date. And we did issue one RFP. What has come about out of that is number one is the cost issue, and number two is just not even able to price out past 6 weeks. And then that affected how many bidders were able to bid on this. And so what we went back and looked at the data and seeing that the four RFP approach versus the one is more beneficial. To split up into these four different categories for commercial and renewable energy, commercial electrification, all residential, and the commercial energy efficiency. And with those RFPs, starting in March here, we're going to start issuing these RFPs out, and it should be within the next 3 or 4 months being able to get all four out and start moving along the process to reach the new certified cost report date of January 1, 2023. And that's all I have for you today. I'm open to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I just have a question. Can you kind of go through the finances of this a little bit with us? I'm trying to recall. This started at so many dollars out of the RDA, I think. Is that unchanged?
Mr. Chair, that was $46.2 million.
Okay, 46.2.
Mr. Chair, there's no difference. There's no difference. Added money to this our project in this bill. It's just what this amendment does is just appropriates the money to the Department of Commerce so that we're able to access the funds when needed.
So, Mr. Johnson, you believe you're still able to achieve the net zero project with the amount appropriated? It's probably going to take some out of, certainly out of the tribe probably additionally. Is that right?
Mr. Chair and members, yes. We believe that we will be able to reach our goal and that we will probably eventually have to put in some of our own funds as well, just to make sure not only if we need that little bit to get to 100% net zero, but also anything moving forward with construction or housing or buildings related to that.
Any other questions by anyone? No other questions? So this bill will move on then to finance, per at least instruction. So is there a motion to move it on to finance? Senator Rarick moves Senate File 3003 be approved by this committee and be forwarded to finance committee. Is any discussions on that, Senator Hotke?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was just, I thought you were ready to move forward with the motion. I didn't know if we wanted to make sure it was as amended so that they...
Oh, pardon me. As amended. Let's just change that that motion to reflect the amendment. Okay. The A2 amendment. Was there a question over here? No, I guess not. Okay. No other questions, then. All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. And... Senate File 003 is off to the Finance Committee. Good luck to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
right, the next bill on the agenda is Senate File 3023. Senator Senjum.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. And Senate File 0323 is a bill that has been before this committee before. It was actually a bill that was in the our omnibus bill last year. It was removed in conference committee. The whole bill deals with the Gas Utility Infrastructure Cost Recovery Statute, and it was a statute that was enacted in 2007, extended in 2013. I believe that extension was for 10 years, which would take it to 2023. It basically allows a gas distribution utility to petition to the Public Utilities Commission to recover costs for repairing or updating its system without filing a full rate case. And that's the whole emphasis here, that a gas utility for, generally speaking, incidental activity, it might be a construction project on a street in Rochester or any of your communities, does not have to go to the Public Utilities Commission to file a full rate case to get their cost recovery on that activity. So costs are approved by the PUC under the statute and included in a rider to the customer's bill, and that's a separate line item on the customer's bill and aren't included in the base rates. I'm going to stop there, and I have a Mr. Schillinger on, I believe, virtually somewhere. Mr. Schillinger, are you there?
I am, Mr. Chair.
Would you pick it up from here, then?
Mr. Schillinger, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Good afternoon. I'm Pat Schillinger. I'm Vice President of State Legislative and Local Affairs for Minnesota Energy Resources Corporation, headquartered in Rosemont, Minnesota. Senator Senjum really articulated the main points of the bill. It extends the sunset date for this rider 5 years. Last year, it was a permanent repeal of the rider sunset date. We've worked out what we think is a compromise for another 5 years. Just a couple quick points, and then I'll stop for any questions. As Senator Senjum said, this really allows for flexibility on just specific types of projects that use smaller utilities like ours and all gas utilities utilize without having to file a full rate case. So it really provides some flexibility particularly for smaller utilities like ours, where we have unknown costs that come up throughout the year that we need to address. And we can do that by, as he said, petitioning the PUC, providing all of the costs, receiving the approval, and then completing the project, sending that back to the PUC for final approval and oversight as well. So there's full oversight of this, but really allows that flexibility for small gas utilities like ours to take on these projects and not have to file a full rate case. Secondly, the other point I want to make is that this does not apply to natural gas expansion projects. So it only really applies to survey, assessments, and construction or upgrade repair for minor projects, but not any natural gas expansion. So I'll stop there. I appreciate your consideration and happy to answer any questions. We have Rich Stasek from our company, who's our Director of Regulatory Affairs. If there's technical questions I can't answer. Again, it's a five-year extension of the sunset date. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schillinger. Senator Senjum, anything to add?
I would just say that, and I don't know if the Public Utilities Commission is here to speak for themselves, but I would say in casual conversation, the Public Utilities Commission in and of itself is a pretty busy body, and this is, lest we not approve this, this is just an additional piece of, I don't want to understate it, but miscellaneous work that they don't have to do in an arduous sort of form if we can just move this along, at least extend it for five more years. So that would be my concluding comment.
All right. Thank you, Senator Senjum. Any questions for the author or the testifier? Seeing none, Senator Senjum moves that Senate File 3023 be recommended to pass and placed on general orders.
That would be my motion, that would be my motion, Mr. Chair.
All right. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you.
Okay, next we have the Commissioner of Commerce going to present to us the Governor's budget recommendations on the energy side for 2022. And it's a pleasure to have you with us once again, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Sunjum.
You need to load your slides or something like that, or you have?
Yeah, I'll give John just a minute to get them up.
Give you a moment
to get used to this microphone again. All right. Good afternoon, Chair Sunjum and members. I'm Grace Arnold. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Commerce, and I have with me my Director of Government Affairs, John Kelly. We also have on virtually Assistant Commissioner Catherine Blauvelt, Michelle Grancy, who's our State Energy Office Director, and Jessica Burdett, who's our Energy and Regulation Planning Manager. So they'll be my phone-a-friends if you guys get too detailed. We appreciate the opportunity to provide the committee an overview of the Governor's 2020 budget proposals, which we have listed on the slide that John's going to move to in a second. Because we have so much to cover, I'm going to dive right into the first proposal, which is the State Competitiveness Fund. I recognize that this committee heard a bit about the fund last week from the department, so I'll give you a little more detail here. Commerce is proposing $20 million in state matching funds to ensure that the department and other eligible entities such as tribes, industry, utilities, and utilities have a pot of money to help them meet match requirements for formula and competitive funding opportunities at the federal level as a result of the federal infrastructure bill, and for Commerce to have adequate staff capacity to help support those proposals. So just as an example, we already know that a state match of 15% will be required for the grid reliability and resilience formula funding that will be coming to the state through the Department of Energy. But what we know about these competitive funding opportunities is limited. If you're interested, you can go to build.gov and you'll see about as much information as we have. So that's, it's pretty limited. And so we'll, you know, kind of go through that. We'll learn as we go and as they start to build out the program parameters. This proposal will ensure that we're maximizers, that Minnesota is not left behind on this historic opportunity for billions of dollars of federal dollars to prevent outages, fund demonstration projects of next generation technology, enhance grid resilience, and more. So how would communities get help from Commerce through this proposal? We would allocate matching funds to eligible entities, utilities, businesses, et cetera, particularly disadvantaged communities, likely through a competitive RFP process. Communities will know best what their needs are, and Commerce would also strive to provide technical assistance like information, webinars, and talking with community or businesses one-on-one to make sure they have the information they need. Next, I'd like to talk about weatherization. We're proposing $58.5 million from fiscal year 23 through 25 to serve 15,000 Minnesotans, that's about 6,000 households, to make a significant investment in weatherizing people's homes. Comprehensive weatherization from insulation to door strips permanently lowers home energy costs an average of 20 to 30%. These lasting energy savings will go to Minnesotans who pay at least 2 times higher in energy bills than the average household. We're building on a strong foundation of the successful federal program, but with state dollars, we can serve many more people in need, reduce building emissions, and address barriers to service. For example, this proposal would fund what we call pre-weatherization measures, so health and safety issues like asbestos insulation or big holes in a roof that prevent cost-saving weatherization measures. I'm really struggling today. It would also fund multifamily weatherization, serve more renters across Minnesota, and would fund community-based weatherization for neighborhoods with concentrated areas of poverty or remote communities and tribal nations that are often last to receive services. It's not noted on this slide, but I do want to highlight that DEED is carrying in their budget a complementary $8 million training program for training workforce in clean transportation and weatherization. $6 million of those training dollars would be dedicated for training to boost Minnesota's weatherization workforce. So that could be electricians, HVAC contractors, you know, other kinds of services that encompass all of the weatherization, all of the work that's included in a weatherization project. It would fund training for over 500 Minnesota workers. All right. Next, I'd like to talk about our Green Bank proposal. We're also calling it a Green Innovation Finance Fund, and it's focused on mature technologies and market penetration. It's important that everyone has the opportunity to benefit from clean energy and efficient technologies, and that's why we're proposing money to seed establish a finance entity that can leverage limited public or nonprofit funding to drive private investment in clean energy and climate resilience markets. Green banks currently exist in more than 14 municipalities and states across the country and have supported over $5 billion, that's B with a $5 billion, in investment in clean energy projects in their states and local communities. So we know they can work and can leverage private funds. In Connecticut, they've leveraged over $7 in private capital for every dollar of public capital put into the fund. This is similar in concept to Chair Sunjum's legislation, so I do want to acknowledge that. And it's also we're also trying to recognize that there is a robust lender community with utilities, RDCs, and others that are in the space. We're really aimed at enhancing those current systems and enhancing what's currently possible through private lenders. So one example of a potential value add of a green finance innovation fund is that credit enhancements. So a green finance authority can attract more private capital at affordable rates through credit enhancements like loan loss reserves or loan guarantees. This kind of financing structure helps reduce the risk of those investments for private investors. It enables more capital to flow to clean energy projects. If a private investor is hesitant to enter a new market or can only offer high interest rates, a credit enhancement can provide security to a lender and improve deal economics for the borrower. And because these tools are only used to support mature, low-risk technologies, the credit enhancements allow investors to become familiar with viable markets while minimizing public sector expenditure. So we're really looking forward to working with Chair Sunjum, banks, credit unions, utilities, the St. Paul Port Authority, CEE, consumer advocates, and all other stakeholders that are interested on this concept. All right. Next, I'd like to talk about our greater resilience and water infrastructure proposal. Hundreds of communities across the state have big energy users in wastewater and drinking water plants, which can make up 40% or more of a city's annual energy budget. Plants have opportunities to capture waste heat, making their operations more efficient and reducing their energy bills. But they face barriers in adapting combined heat and power, efficiency, and clean energy technologies. So we're proposing $18 million to fund feasibility studies and projects to save local and tribal governments money by lowering the energy costs of aging wastewater and drinking water plants across the state through energy efficiency, solar, or combined heat and power. And this complements the work of the Public Finance Authority. All right, I know this is a Senator Sunjum favorite, so solar for schools. We're proposing $3 million in additional funding for the Commerce Solar for Schools program. And so just as a reminder, I talked about this on Tuesday, but that is the program for areas outside of XL territory, primarily greater Minnesota, and it's to offer solar energy for up to 45 more schools. Solar for Schools is on track to help reduce energy costs, create local jobs, and provide learning opportunities for students. Since the program opened this year, we've had over 100 requests for applications, and this proposal could create a megawatt or more of total new clean energy power generation while engaging students in the clean energy economy. All right, we have two budget proposals that relate to growing the next generation of Minnesota businesses, and this is the first one. This is about skating to where the puck is. Minnesota's future economic success depends on the ability of its companies and institutions to innovate. There's a multi-billion dollar worldwide market for clean energy technologies, and we want to ensure that Minnesota has a competitive advantage with homegrown businesses and jobs. And we know businesses face hurdles to get products to market and make it to full commercialization. A big one being the availability of capital. Sometimes it's called the Valley of Death for those who are investing. The Decarbonization Technology Investment Fund would be a 10-year fund administered by Commerce. It would be structured to provide a majority of its funding in loans with a smaller subset in grants. The financing would go to innovative energy technology businesses that have done research and development and now are in proof of concept or early commercialization phases. We would prioritize funding for Greater Minnesota and minority women and veteran-owned businesses in Minnesota. Other states such as Colorado, Oregon, and New York have state-level programs to attract clean technology businesses, and we want Minnesota to be competitive not only nationally but globally, and we want those businesses here in Minnesota creating jobs. Next, I'll talk about GRID, or Grants for Renewable Integration and Demonstration. It's a complementary tool to the Decarbonization Technology Fund. So the Decarbonization Technology Fund is a tool to support clean tech business development. GRID is a tool that is focused on fostering business and technology related to the grid. Renewable energy integration, demand flexibility, system efficiency, and grid modernization technologies. This $5 million per year grants-based program to businesses would be funded out of the Renewable Development Account. And as a reminder, the purpose of that account is to support renewable energy integration and grid innovation. All right. You know who to go to if you have questions. And I'm happy to take any questions now.
Any questions on anything? I had one on the green. You mentioned on the, let me just ask the first question. Will we be getting bills on these?
Yes.
Individually, okay. On the Green Bank proposal is, we're not, I think you said it, we're not just establishing a Green Bank. You're going to work collaboratively with existing finance organizations that already are to some degree into this world.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Senjum, for the question. So in general, green banks across the country are sort of public-private enterprises, so they and they work together with the current financing system. In some cases, they're de-risking, you know, so that the traditional lenders can feel, can have a deal structure that makes the, you know, additional lending a little bit more palatable, and this structure can kind of, it sort of goes hand in hand with the current private financing mechanisms and allows those mechanisms to be a little bit less risky, and then you get, you know, quite a bit of benefit. So as a reminder, or I think we talked about this, but the Connecticut Green Bank has used $250 million in public funding, and they've gotten $1.6 billion in overall investment, so they've leveraged the additional amount in private investment.
Maybe just a comment. I hope somebody goes up and this is a shout-out for former Senator Kleiss. I think he has one of the neatest sewage treatment plants in Minnesota, maybe the upper Midwest, up in St. Cloud. So they do a great job, and there's a lot of lessons to be learned from what they do up there. Any other questions? Yes. Senator Frentz, I saw first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Commissioner. Thanks, Mr. Kelly. On the Decarbonization Technology Investment Fund, I heard you say emphasis on Greater Minnesota. I know the committee would love to hear a little more about that. And also, if New York, Oregon are involved in some similar efforts, do they have a similar emphasis on Greater Minnesota? Anything you can share with the committee would be super helpful. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sure, Senator Frentz and Chair Senjum, Senator Frentz. So I don't think that the New York Fund is investing in Greater Minnesota, although we'd love to try to convince them to. So, you know, I think that the idea would be to look for places that are, or companies that are either located in Greater Minnesota. You know, there are a lot of clean energy companies, and there's a lot of opportunity in the market space, and so the idea would be to help those. So the priority would be the location, although if there were technologies that worked in Greater Minnesota too, right, that's...
Follow up, Mr.
Friends.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Mr. Chair. I guess what I'm looking for, Commissioner, is, you know, $35 million, and I know that members of the committee would like to hear, is there any more specificity when we say emphasis on Greater Minnesota? Just as an example, in transportation, we sometimes say this percentage is planned to be spent in Greater Minnesota. I see Mr. Kelly conferring, just asking on behalf of the committee, emphasis on Greater Minnesota. What exactly are we visioning there? Just if there's any further information, Commissioner. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Chair Sundrum, and...
Mankato?
Well, I guess the first question would be, is there a definition? And if it includes Mankato, that's great. But, you know, as members of the committee that represent Greater Minnesota, I'm also asking, as we envision this and as we talk about that money, if you say there's an emphasis on Greater Minnesota, how does that look? What does it mean? Is there any further definition? Mankato, Park, Rapids, anywhere in between. Thank you.
Sure. Chair Sundrum, Senator Friends. So I think what I'm hearing is a request to write in a couple million for Mankato. Kidding.
Well, I actually don't think that's going to swing enough votes on this committee, but a definition that placed a greater emphasis on Greater Minnesota might be interesting to the larger membership base. Is that fair?
Senator Friends, yeah, I couldn't resist. You were just too wide open for that one.
No, I appreciate that.
Chair Sundrum, I can answer a little less glibly if that's helpful. So we would structure the financing so that a certain portion would be allocated to Greater Minnesota. John, do you want to talk about the details?
Sure. Thank you, Commissioner and members. My name is John Kelly. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Department of Commerce. I think while we're still in development in terms of the language, and obviously this is a collaborative process, we look to other grant and loan programs that have been done previously where there is a geographic balance built into the legislation. And then also we used, you know, in drafting the bill that's still with the revisor and hopefully to you soon, the veteran, women, minority-owned business language that's been used in previous economic development bills that were in the jobs bill in previous sessions. So we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We're simply taking good language that has already existed for other grant programs that we've done through the, you know, spending of CARES Act dollars and stuff like that, and rescue plan dollars. So that we're taking existing definitions and building that in.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Friends.
Last comment, I promise. I think decarbonization is the top priority for our efforts to mitigate climate change. And so when I see this, I like it. I think we should be doing it. Again, if there's an emphasis on language that's been used previously that relates to Greater Minnesota, I encourage the department to figure that out, emphasize it, and put it out there. You know, we're trying to pass this stuff through committee, and I think that would be a big help. I also think there's a lot of opportunity in Greater Minnesota, and as we're trying to grow our rural communities, I think decarbonization, you know, you come up with one great idea, it could be huge for the state and by extension the country and the planet there. Other than that, I have nothing further to say. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Friends. Senator Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, for sharing. My initial comment to your presentation is, I know this was likely intended to be a pretty high-level overview, and many of my notes are very few details, need more information, so forth, as we go through this. But I would like to ask you on one point on the first issue mentioned, the State Competitiveness Fund, because something caught my attention. The bullet point on there that says you want this fund, you want to match federal funding for transforming Minnesota's energy and buildings infrastructure. And that feels like a term that can mean whatever the user wants it to mean. So, Commissioner, what do you mean by that term? Give me some more details, please.
Yeah, sure. So the this is all intended to be for competitive opportunities that will ultimately flow through the Department of Energy that were outlined in the infrastructure bill that was passed last year by the federal government. So some of them are fairly broad, and we don't have a lot of detail from the Department of Energy. There is some focus on transmission. There's some focus on grid reliability. There is some focus. There's some matching funds that are available, funds to cities and local municipalities for projects that are related to either energy efficiency or, you know, transitioning over to some clean energy, you know, either clean energy initiatives. So there's, if you look at, we can send you some additional, there are a lot of opportunities. Some of them have light detail from the Department of Energy so far, and so we have a bit of a challenge because we don't have a lot of information about the parameters of the fund, of the programs, but there is a lot of money on the table from the federal government, and so we're looking to make sure we have those funds so that we can pull them down, or we can help cities and cities, municipalities, tribal governments to, you know, assist in matching should they need it.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Matthew.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I would appreciate more of those details if you've got what maybe the most common types of projects you envision through there. If you know that off the top of your head now, I'd like maybe some examples of it. I'd also like to know the word buildings in there. Is there something specific about wanting to change? Are we talking commercial buildings or residential buildings on every street corner? Still a lot of details need to come with this, and just wondering if you know anything highlighting that word.
Mr. or Madam Commissioner?
Chair Senjum and Senator Matthews, so I think the focus would mostly be on energy efficiency projects, but we can get you some additional details about specifics of, you know, what projects we kind of envision and what might be probably an example project or an idea. We don't have a lot of information from the Department of Energy, so we're in a bit of an odd place, right?
Final comment, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that, and I will look forward to that information. And just my frame of reference, Mr. Chair, is I don't have an inkling for just trying to match and grab more federal money just because it's there, just from how I approach these things. So definitely want to see what the projects are lined up for, whether they match with the goals that we want to push forward in this committee, and see if that makes sense to go that route in the end, but definitely want more details on that before I look at that closely. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and I look forward to the more details.
Good. Thank you, Senator Matthews. Senator Rutke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and some of my stuff has already been answered because further details was one of the things at the top of my list, too. And if we get that, that drills down a little bit more. But along that same line, and it could be in that follow-up, unless you've got it handy, but what is the total request of money in this presentation? And then what are the funding sources for them? Usually, most of the presentations we get have one of the pages that's got, you know, the total spend in each category, and then where it's coming from. Is it general fund? Is it special funds? Is it et cetera? So I would kind of ask that maybe that be included if you're going to give us further detail offline.
Yeah, I'm happy to do like a table or something. So Chair Senjum, Senator Aki. Sorry, I'm still getting the back in the hang of this. They're all general fund funded with the exception of the grid project, which is intended to be funded through the renewable development account.
Okay, grid is RDF.
Yep. And that's $5 million annually.
Just a comment, not so much for the commissioner, but it's for Senator Frantz. We could, he's headed out. I think we need to further define Greater Minnesota, right? It's not the counties that border 694, 494. We got to get out in the rural area.
There's agreement. All right. Great. Senator Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner, thank you for the presentation. I'm just wondering if that Greater Minnesota goes third ring suburbs, exurbs, or, you know, where does it start?
It is Senator Newton in the eyes of the beholder, right? They're all great.
And, you know, to follow up on what Senator Matthews was talking about on the competitive fund, the $20 million that we're looking at here, do you anticipate that you will be coming back and asking for more as you see, you know, what the federal projects are and how much they want in matching funds?
Madam Commissioner?
Chair Senjum and Senator Newton, thank you for the question. So we kind of see this as the starting point, and if there were a lot of interest and we had, you know, more folks coming to us, states, city, you know, cities, municipalities, tribal governments, than we had, than the $20 million funded, certainly we'd be back here talking about more. This is sort of our best estimate right now of what's reasonable.
This probably goes to Senator Rarick also, that when you're looking at DEED helping with the weatherization program and training people, would it make sense to have them trained on the job, and then they could extend, you know, that $58 million plus the $8 million to get even more done, rather than being trained in a facility that's just exclusively for training? I'm just throwing that out there.
Madam Commissioner, sorry.
I don't need that title for now. Thank you, though, Chair Senjum and Senator Newton. I think, you know, I don't want to speak for DEED, but I think they have some ideas of how the program would work. I would imagine that they're open to conversation about how, you know, how it could work.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner.
Madam Commissioner, I have a question on the weatherization, and I probably should know this. We have something I think called energy assistance, or something. I mean, we're doing some of this, and I believe we get some federal money to help us do this, and so this would be in addition to whatever that amount of money that I believe we get federally to help us with the run-of-the-mill energy assistance programs that we have. Is that right?
Yeah, Chair Senjum, thank you for the question. Yes, so we've had an influx of federal money both on the weatherization side and on the energy assistance side. We have some ability to make those kind of work together. This, I think the primary benefit that this fund would help, so in addition to helping more households, which we know, I think the latest study we had said that it would take 291 years to serve all income-eligible households. This is a small dent in that timeline, but it also would allow us to do things like fix a hole in a roof that prevents us from using federal dollars. So if we can spend some of the money to take down some of the barriers to using the federal funds, then we can serve more households as well.
Great. Anybody else have any questions on the presentation? Anybody online that I haven't seen that has any questions? I sense none. Well, if there are no other questions, then thank you, Commissioner, for being here today. And committee members, thank you. And it is, 3:50 in the afternoon, and the meeting is adjourned.